First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com, where you can join our RSS feed, our email list, and all the other good things so you can stay in touch with the people who tell you the truth. Yes, that's right. That's what we do here. For you guys that are new to the show, phone number, as always, 858-683-1326. Or you can call 502-805-0334. And you can also sign in right here and using your Facebook account. And you can sign in and join the live chat. If you guys are in the listening queue, as always, we appreciate you being there. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so you can be heard. In the meantime, here we go. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Running ragged as always, Mr. Springsteen.
Well, it is Tuesday.
That never changes. It's one of those inescapable things for me, and that's just the way it goes.
Oh, I hear you, man. It never stops anywhere. I've had some interesting phone calls today. I'm not at liberty to discuss it just yet, but pay attention, guys. This is going to be interesting going forward. That's all I'm going to tell you at this point. We do have some great studies out, though, man.
What kind of teaser is that?
People that are paying attention to the stories we're putting out there will get it. People who aren't, go to LouisvillePolitics.com, check out the last couple of stories, and you'll see where we're going. It's that simple. I was just saying, I've had a very interesting day myself, is what I should have said. Maybe I should have teased it like that. But it has been an interesting day, and I'm looking forward to some more interesting days in the near future. But anyway, man, moving on. Louisville finally got ranked number one somewhere. Yes, Louisville, Kentucky finally got ranked number one somewhere, Ed. We are now ranked number one.
And I know what it is, and I'd like to think that I played my part in that.
Yes, Louisville, Kentucky is – go ahead.
I mean, let's face it. That ranking in all honesty, is probably more, we're more of a dynasty than in basketball or anything else. We're always number one. That's just the way it is. We are. Man, I tell you what, it'll be news when we're not number one. So
you're absolutely
you
right.
Go and tell everybody what it is, because I mean, you live it and die, you live it and suffer it, and so do I. So tell them what it is.
Well, you're absolutely right. Louisville, Kentucky has been ranked number one as the worst city for spring allergies, according to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. We were number five last spring, and I don't know how we were that low. You know, with pollens and everything else here in the Ohio Valley, it seems like the allergies are crazy. But this year we are ranked number one. The foundation, the Asthma and Allergy Foundation, is based in Landover, Maryland. And they release an annual report every year. They released it just on Monday. And, you know, what do you say, man? What do you say? When you live in the Ohio Valley, and really valleys anywhere, I mean, everything settles. You know what I mean? People never understand, well, I don't know why it's so bad there. The allergies are so bad compared to everywhere else. But it's because we are a basically, essentially a rural community. We're loaded with trees. We live in the Ohio Valley. So anytime anything comes through, any shift of nature, it's going to land on top of us. Not to mention, and I still say this, and people say I'm wrong, but if you look at the amount of pollution in Louisville, I think that that has a hell of a lot to do with it as well. You know, especially out here in the South End.
I mean, we are. Everybody's got to remember, we are in the Ohio Valley, so we tend to stay kind of humid, which is going to, and the way I look at it is like, yes, is it miserable? Sure it is. But you know what? It could be worse. We could live in some arid area where nothing grows and nothing flowers,
right.
Nothing pollinates, because that's what's knocking you for a loop. It's nature having a big old orgy right here in the Ohio Valley.
It's
getting it on here.
Well, it's interesting. I lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota for 4 years as part of the military. It was all flat land. It was all wide open. There really wasn't anything, you know, and you had a low humidity. You didn't have allergy season problems up there at all. And then you go to Arizona, which is dry and arid. And, you know, I mean, people talk about Arizona. You know, it's great because you don't have allergies, you don't have anything else. But I don't want to look at a bunch of dirt and sand. That's just me. I'm like you. It's worth it to have four seasons.
Remember, and I've been to Arizona quite a few times, and when I end up in these cities that are not quite Phoenix, because it's hard to envision when you're Phoenix, I actually have made the joke out there probably more than enough times that it's getting old when I go out there. But I say, hey, what caused them to settle the town here? What caused this town? And they look at you funny, and I said, no, seriously, is this where the horse died or something? you had to set up shop because your horse died, right? Like,
oh, my God.
Why would anybody, you know, yeah, you're right. It's beautiful, and it's stark, but, boy, it's dry. And save for some irrigation. Yeah, they don't have the cornucopia of pollination and vegetation that we do. That's for sure.
Right, and you know, and I enjoy having four seasons. One thing about Louisville, Kentucky is you do have four seasons. It's a whole lot of things about this place not to like when it comes to government and everything else, but you do have four true seasons. It's one of the biggest reasons I stay here. But you know,
yeah,
I just
sometimes you get all four of them in 1 month on occasion. But yeah, we got four seasons.
Like we did this year, yeah. I hear you. But you know, we also have some good news going out. That actually came out of our legislature, if you can believe that, here in Kentucky. They passed a bill. It's Senate Bill 124 is the bill number, but it's the bill for marijuana oil trials. And what that is, folks, they want to take the oil from marijuana, and it has been proven in other states to benefit children who suffer from uncontrollable seizures. Got final legislative approval yesterday and was sent to Governor Steve Beshear for his signature. Beshear has said that he didn't see a problem with signing it into law as long as the Kentucky State Police are okay with it, and the Kentucky State Police are. Knowing myself, you know, my godson, I tell the whole world my godson is a special needs godson, and he is seizures constantly, and we've been trying forever to see something like this because we've had a lot of success stories coming out of Colorado and across the nation using marijuana to control seizures. This is another case for opening the door to medical marijuana, and once this is signed into law, then we'll be able to get him into a trial to use that stuff. But the THC content in the marijuana oil has been proven effective against repeated seizures from epilepsy and all of those things. So when you look at this in play, we're planting, if you will, the seed for medical marijuana to finally get approval coming up, aren't we?
Well, yeah, and you know, like I say, when this first went through before the governor got it, I said, you know, it's a damn shame Gatewood not here to see it because it's good. We're pleased with it, but, I mean, let's face it, we had one of the champions of medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, whatever, hemp in Gatewood Galbraith, and he died, you know, not too long ago. And, you know, I think it's a damn shame on it, – it's great that it's happening, absolutely. But the fact that it's criminalized in the first place, when you have a guy like Gatewood out there championing what he was championing, yeah, it's kind of a. I kind of got mixed feelings about it. You want to look at it and says, yes, good, great. Thank you for finally pulling your head out of your ass and getting on with this.
Well, and you're right. And this oil is going to have low doses of THC. So we know there's going to be THC in it, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. You know, but it's not going to be, you know, a big amount that's going to be the mind-altering thing that they accuse marijuana of. But I think it's fantastic that they're moving forward with this. And I'm like you. It's a shame Gatewood's not see this because Gatewood spent 30 years doing this. And it is, to my knowledge, I might be wrong, but it is the first time, you know, that we've done anything to approve any kind of marijuana use at all in any form since it became illegal. So this is a step in the right direction. Senator Julie Denton is the one who sponsored it. And though I'm not a Julie Denton fan, I have to appreciate her efforts in this case. And,
yeah.
You know, so it is something that we needed, and it's something that we can move forward with. And I truly hope I can get, you know, a lot of kids in these trials and these things can be proven effective quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got so many people with epilepsy.
It's a shame it's illegal anyway. It's a shame to some degree. I view it as a shame that the state legislature has to approve what the hospitals are doing.
Right.
Okay, I guess, you know, whereas a little THC and a little cannabis extract is needs government approval, you know, state approval is a legal or illegal substance, whereas oxycodone, OxyContin, and everything else is
right.
Plentiful.
Oh, that's
and
good,
subsidized.
You know. So is meth and heroin, you know, so at least they're finally getting their head out of the butt and doing something. But I'm looking forward to see what these trials give us here in Kentucky. You know, and it's interesting because it's been proven in other states why we have to go through this so-called trial to use medical use of marijuana oil is beyond me. I don't know why we don't just open it up. But as we know in Kentucky, everything is completely backwards and slow. So, you know, we got to kind of look at this. So I thought it was pretty interesting. Another thing that came out of the legislature, they approved legislation, House Bill 128, is going to approve legislation that will allow victims of domestic violence permission to temporarily carry concealed deadly weapons. Instead of having to go to the class and then file to get your concealed carry permits, which is kind of time-consuming, the House Bill 128 basically is going to let anybody that has an EPO in effect, an emergency protective order in effect, or a domestic violence order in effect, to apply immediately for a temporary permit for carrying concealed deadly weapons. What this essentially does is it protects them from day one for the first 45 days. They'll be able to use that temporary permit for 45 days, but during that 45-day period, they've got to complete the firearms training requirement to get the permanent concealed carry permit. So, personally, I like the idea of carrying concealed without having to go to the government for permission, but that's something we have to do here. And this does allow the victims something, you know, that right away without having to worry and go through all of that. So I thought that was a pretty interesting decision, too, one I agree with.
Yeah, I think the mere existence of a bill like that, of the opportunity, the mere existence hopefully will – once somebody files domestic violence charges, just knowing that they can do that maybe will keep you keep the abuser at bay, thinking, wow, I don't have 5G. You know, he or she could have loaded up and been locked and loaded inside of 3 hours. So it's like
the only concern. I was going to say the only concern I've really got is because I know that there are a lot of people out there who file these EPOs and domestic violence orders, even though they're not factual. They make these things up when they're having problems with their ex or soon to be ex or whatever. So there's a lot of people there, and we've got cases of that we've talked about before, where people will go down, primarily females. Sorry, women, you seem to be the biggest ones. You're not going to see a guy go down. He's too embarrassed to do it. But you'll see a woman go down to go down and file an emergency protective order, a domestic violence order, when she has never been in any kind of jeopardy at all. And something like that haunts a man for the rest of his life. So, I hope that the courts, knowing that this is an option right away, I hope that the courts will also do due diligence and make sure that the charges are indeed factual before they go through and put an EPO or a DVO out there. I mean, to me, it's almost like a paperwork transaction now. You go down there and you apply for it. The police come to your door within 24 hours. You've got this temporary restraining order on you. Then you go to court. The judge goes ahead and approves it anyway. It's become a revolving door thing, and it's screwing up a lot of lives, good men's lives, and some women. But it's destroying a lot of good lives because of some sort of a hateful vengeance that your particular partner has against you. So I hope that at least if we're going to go down this road, that we at least address domestic violence and we at least address the EPO requirements and everything else in a fair and an overreaching way, if you will. I want them to look at this completely at a complete situation, because if we don't, we're going to have a lot of people that are out there that are hateful and pissed off that are going to use that excuse. Well, I've got an EPO and I've got this domestic violence order and I've got this concealed carry permit temporarily for the next 45 days. And then the first 30 days, because they're still angry enough and upset enough to go lie about an EPO or a DVO, they're upset enough, they're going to go out and shoot somebody and kill them. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that concerns me with it. I like the fact that we're finally doing something here, and I think that this will give real victims some peace of mind that they have some control over their situation. But I just hope that the courts are going to quit this revolving door and not make it a blanket thing. You know, I mean, if you have somebody that has an EPO, if I had an EPO against you, for example, and I'll make myself the female to make you feel better, Ed, but if I had an EPO against you, for example, just because I was pissed off at you, you had an affair, you screwed around, you did something, so I went and got that. When the courts look at that, they look at you as a problem child.
Wait a minute, you would get an EPO on me for that, because I didn't know you had those feelings for me, Ed.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I said I qualified that first. But the reality is, though, that's what I'm concerned with, is those kind of things. Hey, and go ahead.
I was going to say, I just think you're going to follow up on that. It's like, wow, you should have let me know before you filed the EPO. I didn't know you felt that way.
Yeah, all these years later. That's the thing, because what you're going to have is you're going to have, we see it so many times today, women are chasing men and everything else, and things like that, but they'll go out and falsely swear to an EPO or a DVO, and it's automatic for the courts and the system to just go ahead and grant it anymore. And once that's done, here you've got somebody who is innocent in a lot of cases, not most, not all, but a lot of cases, that are now saddled with being considered a criminal because of an EPO or a DVO that was falsely put against them, and that's an open blanket invitation. So if you're a riled, spouse or a riled girlfriend or something, and you're pissed off at your boyfriend or your husband, they went screwing around, basically it's open season. Once that EPO is on your record, it's going to be there right away, and you get this temporary carry permit right away. You go off in a fit of rage and you shoot them, you're going to immediately be able to say, oh, well, he came after me, so I shot him. And you're off the hook. You're getting away with murder for free. And I don't like that aspect of it. So all I'm bringing up
well,
here,
the,
I guess, is...
the truth of the matter, I don't think that's a big deal, because what you're talking about is concealed carry, right?
Yeah, it's temporary.
There's no waiting period on an assault shotgun or a shotgun or a high-powered rifle. You can go buy them. If there were a probability that an abused spouse, with this bill we're going to go blow the abuser away or whatnot, they'd already done it. This is just a concealed carry that will hopefully, on the street, keep the abuser, give him something to think about. Because if the abusee wanted to pump them full of lead. They just take the FPO out and get them close enough for some double hot buck, and it's over.
Well, see, I'm looking at things from a little bit different situation here. For one thing, you can openly carry a shotgun. You can openly carry a handgun out in public. I could walk down the street with a handgun and a holster on my side if I want to, and I'd have to worry about it. As long as it's not concealed, I don't have to have any permit for that whatsoever. But the difference is, though, if you're coming through with a shotgun, a rifle, or anything like that, you know, you're going to be seen with that. You're not going to be able to conceal that. So chances are you're not. I mean, you know, it's more beneficial that you're not going to get close enough with that to shoot somebody. But let's say I'm out at a restaurant or something with a girlfriend. Okay, my wife decides that she wants to come after me for whatever reason. She's already lied, got an EPO or a DVO out, whatever reason it is. All right, and I'm at a restaurant with somebody. She walks right into that restaurant. Nobody knows who she is. She can walk, get right next to me and pull that out of her purse or her pocket, blow my brains out right there. There is no warning at all. And how long does it take to do that? Less than a minute. So, you know, you look at all of these things. That's all I'm saying is I want the courts to be start considering the fact that this could be a license to kill. And the only reason I feel that way is because of the way it is today. I mean, people just don't have any value in anything anymore. And I do get concerned about that. I like the idea that we're giving the victim some way to protect themselves right away. But I want to make sure that when we do these DVOs and EPOs, that the courts are going to start taking a harder look at these cases and make sure that they truly are making the right decisions and not basing it on some sworn testimony that 50% of the time is false. That's all I'm getting at. Here's the situation for you, Ed. The Courier-Journal is putting out a story over the weekend on Friday or Saturday, I think. Anyway, you know, we talked a little bit. Attorney General Jack Conway was sent the case back on David James by our Commonwealth Attorney Tom Wine. We reported on that last week that Tom Wine has said he basically doesn't have the jurisdiction to deal with this issue. That is Jack Conway's responsibility, and put it back on Conway. Well, now Jack Conway, because he's still too scared to take the issue up, suggested Friday that they're going to put a special prosecutor on this case to determine whether Councilman James is still able to maintain his employment as a U of L police officer and a Metro Council member at the same time. So here we've got Tom Wine. It wasn't his responsibility in the first place, but Conway sent it to him. And I can almost give Conway credit a little bit for sending it to Wine and letting him make the decision. But Wine can't do this for a lot of different reasons, so he sends it back to Jack Conway, who is charged with making this decision. It's what we pay him for, and once again, he's kicking the boot and costing taxpayers money by getting a special prosecutor to look at this simple arrangement that is commonplace just about everywhere in every profession in Kentucky. What do you think about that?
Well, I think in a lot of ways... You know, let's face it. It is, and we talk about it at times. And you and I were both there when a certain other attorney type politician made jokes about him.
Uh-huh.
He's probably just not that good. I mean, like Paul the other day said, "Hey, yeah, I'll take door number two." He's just not that good. So I think he's confused. I think he's embarrassed, and I think this is like the marriage recognition thing. It's a handoff,
right?
Because if he's incompetent, he doesn't have the stones for it. I think he doesn't have the brain, and I don't think he has the guts for it. I think he has the guts for it because he knows that if they push this issue too far, as it has already been brought up. And a lot of people take O's. It's like, okay, Jack, well, you know, get your little massager in your chair because you're going to be working extra hours when everybody that took an oath has to defend themselves against, you know, the fact that they took two O's. So he's afraid of the political ramifications, and I think he's afraid of, you know, just looking like a buffoon in court. So, yeah, a handoff is totally predictable with him.
Well, I totally agree. And you know, in Wine's defense, I mean, I think Wine made the right choice here. He wrote to Conway on March 21st and said that his prosecutors sometimes rely on David James in his role as a police officer to testify as an expert in criminal cases. So, you know, and then you throw in that Councilman James also votes on the city's portion of the budget that goes to Wine's office, obviously there's an ethical conflict of interest here, okay, for Wine to take any case that deals with David James, whether it was this case or any other. So because David James is a Metro councilman, like I said, he votes on the city's portion of the budget for Tom Wine's office. That's already a conflict of interest. Then you throw in the fact that as his role as a police officer, you know, he's an expert in criminal cases. Wine had no choice to send this back to Jack Conway, but Jack Conway knew those things when he sent it to Tom Wine. To me, it's Jack Conway trying to kick, you know, to pass the buck and kick the can down the road because he doesn't want to take responsibility for a decision that he should be making. So we are looking probably at a special prosecutor to look at this case. What it's going to cost the taxpayers, I don't know. But I think it's just one more travesty of justice and one more travesty of wasting our tax money. That's just the bottom line for me.
Well, and I think, you know, also, like I say, there's political. Jack is a, he's a coward politically. He wouldn't touch the gay thing. He wouldn't, he gets chapped every time he tries to take on the price gouging. Until he got chapped for going along with the mortgage settlement, which was pathetic, he was going along with it, and he got called out on it, and he's like, "Oh, I better side with Schneiderman." He is absolutely staying as far within the lines, not crossing anybody. Everybody knows he wants to be governor, and this is just another case of it. He doesn't want to piss off Democrats, but. But then again, he doesn't want to go in too limp and just kind of roll over because there's Democrats on the other side of this equation. So he ducked it. That's what he's just ducking it again. No big surprise there.
Well, you know, and I think that's part of it because David James is a Democrat. If this was a Republican, he would have already made a decision. But he's too scared of what base he's going to make mad. If he wants to be governor, take care of these political ambitions he's got, he doesn't want to go after a Metro Council member and an African-American council member at that because the West End typically wins the Louisville Democrats elections. That's just the way it is. So he's not dumb, but I hope that everybody sees through this charade. In the meantime, one of the bills that I hoped would get through the legislature that did not is a bill that would restore voting rights for Kentucky felons. According to lawmakers, it isn't likely to pass this year. They couldn't come to an agreement. Apparently, there were different versions of this legislation. Senate floor leader Damon Thayer from the GOP had previously amended the bill to include a 5-year waiting period and not cover felons that had multiple offenses. So, you know, he tried to appease the Democratic side of it, and they still weren't there. And a lot of people were upset because they said that even those changes were only going to help about 90,000 to 180,000 Kentuckians that are out there. WFPL did a great story on this. You guys can look at that. So it's not going to get passed this time. So once again, you know, people who have served their sentence and done their dues, it's disturbing to me. It's disturbing to me that, once again, they're being shorted.
They are, and I mean, I don't get the 5-year waiting period. I mean, if we're going to do that, then once again, we need to test, if we're just, you know, the 5 years that they're saying, oh, well, we want to make sure you don't cross the line again. It's like, well, look, if they cross the line again, they'll be pretty quickly convicted and they'll lose their rights again. Get over it, you know, be realistic. You only vote once or twice a year, so, you know, and that's every other year, so... Uh-huh. You know, the 5 years, I mean, why? Fine, make it 8 year, you know, but the 5 years, I don't get that, and I feel bad for the people because I'll be real honest. I've known guys, I've hired some guys fresh out of prison, and they really, really try to get it together, you know. They go about and you can get driver's licenses and everything else, but why you can't take a guy that's been in for 9 years and really making an effort to get it together, and why can't you let him vote? I don't get that. It's one vote. Not like he's going to hurt you with it. You know, I don't get it.
I don't get any of it. And that's the whole thing. And once again, I mean, this is just to me a travesty of justice. You know, we're not going to take care of the guys. I mean, you know, when you make a mistake and you've paid your dues, you know, we have to find some way to overcome this because there are so many people out there that are unemployable. As we said, there's 180,000 Kentuckians that the original bill was going to help, you know, that are employable, but because they've got this conviction on their record and they paid their dues to society, you know, you're generous. Most people won't look at you that way. I mean, I couldn't even get hired because I had an open case on a daggone arrest. You know what I mean? I know firsthand how bad it hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, so I can just imagine what it is for those guys. It's just not right. So we need to work on some way to overcome that, and hopefully we can do that next year.
Yeah,
the thing is,
again, you know, I've seen it because actually it was local police in a number of cases would come up to me and say, hey, look, we know you can work with these guys. Just get them back in the groove of actually showing up for work and help them build a work history and whatnot. You know, so I do it actually in some cases at the behest of the local police out in Mount Washington, which are a great bunch of guys. And to stop and think about it, you know, old Ben Franklin, representation without or taxation without representation. I mean,
right.
That's basically what you're doing. You're saying, okay, you get out, we want you to be gainfully employed, and they very much mean that. You know, they sit on these guys to get jobs if they're paroled and stuff. They don't just want you sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be employed. You're going to be paying taxes. I mean, hell, if you get a car, you're going to be paying anything you do, you're going to be paying taxes. So you're going to get taxed. And yet you don't get a say in much of anything.
Right. Well, I think you're right. I think you're right. And that's the problem. We've got to address this in a fairer way than what we always have, because once again, we're destroying lives. And there's somebody getting arrested. There's so many arrests now. The prisons are getting so full. You know, Kentucky can lead the way. Well, not really lead the way. We just follow other people's examples. But, you know, we could become one more state that did the right thing. You know, we've got other things going on out there. But I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Churchill Downs for a minute. Very interesting stuff. We continue to talk about them, and we're going to tell you why in just a second. We'll be right back, folks. Don't forget, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334 are the numbers. We'll talk to you in a minute. Be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We are back right here at the Ed Springson Show on the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget to check out littlepolitics.com, edspringson.com, and you can click on the email newsletter and join our email newsletter and join the thousands who get our newsletter each and every week. You can also get in and join the RSS feed. Our shows will come right to you. You can also hear the shows on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. both of which are the two biggest names in radio these days. So all kinds of ways to hear the show and pass it to your friends, and let's take it from there. Ed, you know, I found an interesting story with Churchill Downs. This actually came out of WFPL, and what made it interesting was the fact that, you know, Churchill Downs, Inc., you know, controls the horse industry. Kentucky horse industry, you're going through CDI. What's so fascinating here is this whole casino gambling issue that we continue having problems with is only because all of the lawmakers are bought off by the Churchill Downs lobbyists, who are trying to get control of as much of that money as they possibly can in gambling revenues coming from casinos. They keep complaining that the casinos in Indiana and the surrounding areas are hurting their horse business and putting them out of business, that it's killing their paydays and everything else for their horse races and stuff. They're not getting the payouts and everything else they should be getting. Well, here's the problem, folks. WFPL did a great job on this story. $2.5 billion. You heard me, folks. $2.5 billion passes through Churchill Downs Inc. last year in bets. Now, remember, they're only open twice a year for a total of about 10 to 12 weeks. They took in $2.5 billion in bets. What did that do to them?
CDI. They have plenty of tracks, but yeah, but that's
CDI.
I appreciate that,
but again, the whole gambling issue is statewide. CDI is statewide. This is the deal. But they made $779 million in revenue out of that $2.5 billion. It was an 11% gain in profit. An 11% gain, well, let me rephrase that. It's 11% gain in the measure of profit that they use to calculate executive bonuses. The stock price went up 35% in CDI last year to $89.65 a share. So how did Churchill Downs handle all this? They didn't go to the legislature and say, hey, we made all this money, so we really lied about needing it from the casinos. No, they went ahead and gave their top executives, their top five executives, $27.9 million split between them for bonuses. Ed, I see stories like this as many times as we jump on Churchill Downs as part of CDI. You know, we continue to tell the whole world that they're making money, that they're making profits. This clearly shows it. Their stock price went up 35%. Their shareholders love it. They made $779 million in revenue. They use double digits to figure out the profit, the bonuses that they give to their executives, and they gave these executives $27.9 million in bonuses. Tell me why Churchill Downs and the horse industry has to have casino gambling revenue to survive.
Well, because they want to pay $50 million in bonuses. You know, that's why. I mean, this is, you know, it would be interesting to really delve into it, to also see on top of everything else how did they take these bonuses? Are these bonuses taken as a stock option or some other way where they could categorize it as a capital gains thing? So are they even paying, you know, let's face it.
Well, part of it,
they get away with a lot of stuff. They got a massive piece of the property that don't pay any taxes in Louisville. So it wouldn't surprise me, but yeah, it's just, you think of the free ride they get as far as the no tax thing, you know, all the rights and the way it's enforced for the Twin Spires and everything. I'm with you. It almost leaves you speechless when they're like, we need the money. You know, we've been kind of poking fun at them for years about this. You know, oh, we need the money. Every year, ever since they've tried to co-opt the casino gambling thing, we always pull the numbers on Churchill Downs. Some years it's not double digits, but I can't think of a year just coming, you know, in the years that we've been having some fun with them, that they've ever lost money.
I've been paying attention to Churchill Downs for 10 years. That's when I decided to get involved and start making a difference. And that culminated with me running for mayor in 2006. And in 2006, I took a real close look at Churchill Downs, and I've been watching them closely ever since. There has not been a year that Churchill Downs has lost money. There has not been a year that their revenue did not go up. There has not been a year that their executives haven't gotten their bonuses. You know, as we said, their stock price went up 35% last year alone, and their stock is now right at $90 a share. Churchill Downs is not suffering, and they're working 10 to 12 weeks a year they are open. Now, I'm not saying that there's nobody working at Churchill Downs the rest of the year. You're talking about the immigrant workers who are doing the hot walks and everything else for the horses that are stabled there, but they also get stable fees for their horses. So this is just the betting money alone. This isn't the money that they're getting from the trainers who put their horses there, all right, that are paying the wages of these people, even though they're low wages. No, this is just from betting alone. And when we look at this, it just reinforces exactly what we've been saying for years. Churchill Downs property, owned by the city. They don't pay a dime in anything. They don't pay one dime in any taxes whatsoever. To my knowledge, since they're a city-owned property, last word I had was a couple of years ago, they don't even pay a water bill. City properties don't pay water bills. Did you know that? Because the city owns a Louisville Water Company. So all of these things are going on, and Churchill Downs is basically getting all of these millions and millions of dollars in tax breaks every year already because we subsidize them. They're making all this profit, and they're still crying, saying they need casino gambling pass so they can get more. So what your original statement was, why would they do this? So they can get $50 million in bonuses instead of $25? I agree 100%. I agree 100%. So this is going to be really interesting how it goes. another story coming out of WFPL, and I got to tell you guys, I love Philip Bailey over there. He does a great job, and a whole host of others do too. You know, I like WFPL as a source because they do due diligence in their reporting for the most part. They don't come across as these whiny-ass titty babies and liberal surcharges. Although they do have a liberal slant, they report more fairly than most of the mainstream here in Louisville does. And quite honestly, they just got a bunch of awards from the Associated Press. Now, you know, I really want to give them some props for that. Our good friend Philip Bailey got a couple of awards as well. But anyway, in response to the violence last Saturday night, for you guys who wasn't paying attention for whatever reason, we spent a lot of time on this last week. Last Saturday night, we had a group of teenagers. There was about 200 teenagers gathered at the Walk Bridge, and they went on a spree, a violent, illegal spree, beating people up, raiding grocery stores, whatever. last week, they had two meetings on Thursday night. They had one meeting for the boys and one meeting for the girls. They were begging the teens to come to these meetings to address this violence and see what we can do to help. So the boys were invited to a conversation at the Yearlings Club in West Louisville. I've actually been there. Great place. Reggie Meeks has done a fine job working with the Yearlings Club. And the women were invited to go to the Louisville Urban League at 15th and Broadway. They had about 100 girls at their location and 100 boys at the other, so it was pretty good. But the media was invited to attend both of these events. But lo and behold, when the media was there at the girls' meeting, Assistant Chief Yvette Gentry and our great friend Sadiqua Reynolds decided that they were going to ban the media. So they invited the media to attend, and when they got there, they decided to kick them out. So the media wasn't allowed in there. What is even more interesting is, according to the story, and this actually came out of WFPL, they did a great job. According to the story, 14-year-old Jaywan Taylor was at the boys' meeting, and I think he said it best, because they were trying to have these conversations and acting like they knew what was wrong with these kids. And Jaywan Taylor told the truth. He's one of the guys who lives in the neighborhood. He's one of the guys who has to fight every day for his own survival. And 14-year-old Jaywan Taylor said that this meeting was a joke. They brought a bunch of kids from private schools and churches and Montessori schools and stuff like that. They're not going to the hood. They need to be going to Victory Park, and they need to be coming to Beecher Terrace, which is where most of the gangs are. And he says the adults in the meeting were doing nothing more than sugarcoating the issue, and they're not keeping it real. And according to Jaywan Taylor, he said, "We have violence because it's all we see. We don't know anyone who is successful. We see people being broken every day, so we want to break people. We need stuff to do." Now, here we go, straight from the horse's mouth, who attended the meeting hoping to find some answers. 14-year-old kid is looking for answers, and he just told you how it was. They just want to sugarcoat. They don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to go where the violence really is. What do you say, Ed?
I say the kid's got, I mean, he's probably rough, and he's probably one of the problem kids, but you got to give him props for being honest. I mean, and that's the one thing that I've seen on all sides right now is maybe the good that will come from this incident is that after it happens and everybody gets to see that the authorities, that the city, whether it's the mayor, the police, whoever, they're the ones that are in the largest part of denial. And maybe we're starting to see that, you know, the white East Enders, if you want to break it off like that, maybe we're starting to see that they're one of the reasons they maybe don't prioritize it is because the administration and the government and the media is kind of sweeping it under the carpet. It doesn't seem like a big problem. Hey, we can go downtown, you know, the Yum Center. It's all good, right?
Sure.
You know, great lawn. There's no problems down there. There's no angry youth because, you know, the mayor's office says so, right? So I think that's something positive that's going to come from this is that now the angry youth are standing up and, and let's just say, not – beating people up is not the way to get your point across, but there are some of them that are speaking in a very articulate fashion, telling you what's wrong, and like this kid. And it's like, thank God somebody put a mic in front of this kid.
Oh, just I agree about, with you 100%.
Just about had it with some of these, you know, these community activists that show up, you know, not ones like Eddie Woods who are always there, but yeah, some of these community activists, you know, your buddies.
Yep, you can say that.
And stuff, you know, they show up after the fact. And, you know, these kids are laying it down. There's no more. And this kid blew them out of the water. They were basically doing more window dressing. Let's invite some cameras in. Let's all those kids sit down. You know, they're all paying attention to the speakers. Yes, it's all sinking in. And then you got a kid come out and say, man, this was a load of crap.
Well, I agree with you. And there's no reports.
You could get. It's like, thank you. Thank you so much for calling them out on it. Now let's, you know, like kid said, let's get real with it.
Well, I want to point out a couple of things, too. Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry, remember her and Chief White and how close they are and all of that crap. Hey, if I was Chief Conrad, I'd get rid of her tomorrow. I would have got rid of her the day I got hired. But I guarantee you that's a political position. He can't get rid of her. He would have. But Yvette Gentry, Deputy Chief, and Sadiqua Reynolds were controlling the girls' meeting, and they, after inviting the media to come there, kicked out photographers and reporters. They didn't want them there. Now, the boys' meeting, they were still there. They were allowed to stay. And that's how you got the comments from Jaywan Taylor, you know, because he was at the boys' meeting. It is very interesting. But there's another interesting quote here. This is actually from WDRB. You know, I was following more of this story late last week on Thursday and Friday. And Minister Gerald Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. I always hesitate to use the name minister because you can walk on any street corner and there's 1,000 ministers when you go to the West End. Everybody is a minister. Everybody wants Kevin Cosby's money, but they don't play dirty like he does, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, Gerald Muhammad with the Nation of Islam, Minister Gerald Muhammad, spoke at the news conference. He's part of the group Man Up. Man Up, of course, is a group that our good friend Meshawn Daniels is in charge of. And he's part of the group Man Up. And he said that I agree with this statement from him. And that's what I love about some of these guys who are finally out there able to talk. But Minister Gerald Muhammad said, I must say, I don't think the problem is with the youth. The problem is the leadership. These children have parents. They have school teachers. They've got aunts. They've got uncles. They've got pastors. And there's a long list of people who have failed to do their job. So he put the blame where it needed to be. And I commend him for it. How about you?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's good to hear that. Because all too often, and, you know, I don't want to – I've got some very realistic liberal friends, but we both know liberals. They are – when an incident like this had happened in the past, they would contort than torture themselves to find a way to put the blame, come up with an excuse, come up with something other than the actual guilty party. You know, it's a single mom. I was always saying there is no such thing as a single mom. There's a father, too. I mean, mom can't do it alone. It's only happened once. You know, so there's a father. Where are we going to start, you know, start holding the right people accountable for their, you know, for their choices to either, you know, to procreate, for their choices to not be involved in their children's lives? You know, we've got to drop the hammer on that. But even at that, I'm not even satisfied with that personally. I think that's absolutely what Joe Muhammad said was the first thing we need to address. We need the community itself, in the directly affected community, needs to look at people who are responsible for this and say, you have failed. You have failed your children. You have failed the community. Look what the hell is happening here.
Okay, I agree.
Let's move on from that. You know, and I think that's the most important first step. It's like there are failures here, and let's not go torturing and contorting ourselves trying to find somebody nameless, faceless. You know, let's pick a group that we can blame. No, we got to blame individuals for this. We got to hold individuals responsible for this.
Well, I agree with you, and our good friends at Wave 3, and I've got to admit I'm partial to Wave 3. I'm on their editorial board, so there's your full disclosure. But our good friends at Wave 3 actually put out a story on this on March the 27th, and they included an email from Yvette Gentry. Now, last Saturday night was March the 22nd. In the hours after all of this happened, after all of this mob violence happened Saturday night, Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry, once again, who should be out of a job. I don't know how the hell she's got a job. I knew why she had it when she was here with Chief White. They were a little chummy, if you will. But, you know, Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry wrote a document in the hours after called the Flash Mob Violence. And according to her email and this document that she sent out, she told the whole world that the department had been concerned about this kind of an issue for a long time, that over the past few months, violence has been an issue that has left numerous law-abiding citizens victimized, some with moderate to serious injuries. Chief Conrad didn't get it. Chief Conrad, when he was asked about this, remember he told the media on Monday and Tuesday that this is the first problems that they've seen in that area that he was aware of since the beginning of the year. On Sunday night, Conrad said it was an exception to the normal experience at Waterfront Park. And then on Monday, of course, he went further on down the road. When he was asked what he knew about the problems that happened at Waterfront Park, he said, really not much. Now, give Chief Conrad some slack here. He'd been out of Louisville for quite a few years as a chief at a department in Arizona, and we hired him back to take over as chief when Robert White left last year. So he became chief May or June. I can't remember exactly when of last year. So this is the first time he's had to look at this, you know, in the top row. So give him some credit here. But if Yvette Gentry says that she's known about this for months and she puts it in writing the next day after this happens on Sunday, let's be clear here. Who's got the responsibility? Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry has the responsibility because Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry has been the continuing link when all of this stuff has been going on for years, including under Chief Robert White when they first started hiding this stuff. And she is the one who should have been out there taking the lead in controlling this and informing Conrad of her actions. So this, to me, reeks of cover-up by Yvette Gentry, and perhaps that's why she didn't want the media there with the girls' group on Thursday night. It's very, very serious situation.
She wasn't worried about the girls. She was worried about getting pinned without her notes by a reporter going, hey, how come the chief didn't get your memo?
You betcha. She was scared to death. That's the whole thing. She was protecting herself, so it's easy to see why the courage of a 14-year-old named Jaywan Taylor, it's easy to see why his courage was discounted. They bust in a bunch of people who don't have to live in the hood and don't have to live with this street violence and live in the neighborhoods with these gangs every day. And I find that insulting. I find that very insulting, and the whole black community should find that insulting, that Yvette Gentry, a black deputy chief, who should be interested in what's going on in the neighborhoods. They rely on. They wanted her to be the deputy chief. They asked for Robert White to come here, got what you wished for, and these same people have failed once again. And it's just one more example of the politics in this town and the Democratic politics and leadership at all levels, including the police department and Yvette Gentry, failing to do their job by the citizens of our community. And the black leadership should be angry as hell. But no, what do? Here's the next phase of this, Ed, and I'll try to make this short. You know me. But here's the next phase of this. So Greg Fisher, in his infinite wisdom, decides to take a little thing. Bob Hill, former columnist of the Courier-Journal, Bob Hill, had written stating that he thought, you know, there should be a walk across the bridge on Sunday, the same bridge where all of this started at, to unify the community. Mayor Fisher makes a big announcement of this, said it's going to be a big deal. He attends. He's going to walk too. 200 people show up on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock to walk across this bridge to show that it's safe, 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon. Pay attention to that time and time, folks, okay? It wasn't Saturday night after dark, all right?
Yeah,
so they're going to walk
Sunday,
across this
Sunday
bridge.
Half the troublemakers are still asleep.
You betcha. And what do you have? You have all of these great photo opportunities of the mayor walking across this bridge and Bob Hill getting all this credit. You know, this washed-up has-been liberal hack that he was with the CJ for all those years. He's getting all of this credit for trying to organize this. Greg Fisher's getting all these great photo ops of 200 people that were primarily white bred community, some wearing suits and dressed up, so ultimately, you know, the liberal rich whites, all this other stuff, walking across a bridge in the middle of a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, like you said, the hood was asleep. And the black community that would normally probably go ahead and engage in this and make this a unified march, if there's any one thing that the black community agrees on, as a whole community, is God and church. At 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon.
And if there's a second thing they can be in unison on is, who in the hell's Bob Hill?
I agree.
You know,
and that's the thing.
Bob Hill, an old liberal white journalist who probably definitely doesn't live in the West End,
mm-hmm.
is calling for it. I mean, if you want to call for it, okay, as much as you like him or don't like him, Christopher 2X or somebody, or have one of the black community activists call for it, but Bob Hill's calling for community.
Well,
I'm sure that message got to every person in West Louisville. I'm sure they all hang on Bob Hill's every word.
Well, it's funny you bring up Christopher 2X, because this is a guy that I despise. I literally do. I think he's nothing more than an ambulance chaser. I think this guy has not done anything but pull the wool over people's eyes to make himself look good and important. But that's just me, and I'll take that. But he is a community activist. But since you brought him up, he did have some things to say that I totally agree with. Christopher 2X said that the event organizers were not equipped to reach out to teens. He said, here's another clashing 1 o'clock on a Sunday is worship service in the black community. They didn't even consider that. And if Greg Fisher's standard, you know, photo op response was, well, everybody was invited. Well, you know that the black community is in church at 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. And then, of course, we've got a 14-year-old by the name of Dorian Birdsong. Here's another person that was quoted in the paper. And this is WFPL, folks. They've done a great job covering this story. Give credit where it's due. But Dorian Birdsong is 14 years old and said that even if teens had have showed up, they wouldn't be able to relate to the people who attended. Birdsong went on to say that adults, especially those in suits, can't influence teenagers because teenagers, they see people getting seriously hurt or locked up before they even begin to change behaviors because there's no other way to get them to change. So what that tells me is you're not going to get a white bread man coming up in a suit, living the white bread life, trying to tell a hood rat, you know, how to live their life, and they're going to take them serious. They don't live in that reality. Eddie Woods lives in that reality. The rich white East Enders don't. Greg Fisher don't, and Greg Fisher doesn't care. I've said on this show many times that I personally think that Greg and his sister Lynn Fisher are racist, And I continue to believe that because of asinine stunts like this. You know, in Lawrence Webb 15, he said, if you're going to have something like that, a Sunday community walk, to have any impact at all, you've got to be able to get the teens involved. And, you know, the only way you can get the teens involved is to do something fun. Do some fun stuff, something different that they're not used to. Quit talking to them and include them. Give them a reason to be there. And I agree with that. I agree with that.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, because I mean, these teams, you got to stop. You got to think these teams that are coming up rough. You know, life's about survival, and sometimes, unfortunately, survival entails forcing your will on another person, whether you're just intimidating or actually beating the crap out of them. You know, it involves in their world is very cut and dry. It's got to make, you know, at least to them, it's got to make sense. And I think at least on that level, I think I can relate to these kids where they would probably look at this walk like I look at this walk. Like, okay, so everybody's going to drive down there. They're going to ride the bus there. They're going to walk there. And then we're going to walk across a bridge. And accomplish what?
Yeah. We're going to have a bunch of white
people
singing Kumbaya.
It's like, while everybody's getting organized for one big walk across the bridge at 1 o'clock, everybody's going to gather here, and then we're going to walk, and then we're going to come back, and then we're going to answer a few questions for anybody that has any questions from the media. We're going to pose for some pictures, and I'm going to get in my car and say, well, crap, there's 3 hours of my life I'll never get back.
I'm totally in agreement with you, man. I tell you what.
So let's walk.
I am in total agreement with you. I really am. It's just nuts to me that this goes on. We've got one Louisville man. He apparently goes by the name of Brother Mahi. He was very upset because the teenagers weren't there and the West Louisville communities weren't there. You know, pay attention to that. The West Louisville community was not there, and neither were any teenagers. And he went on to say that you can't have these pulpit preachers and block watch people be the only ones to show up. You need people to actually step out in the parks, take hands together. And he said, just looking around at this thing, it's not going to help anything. This was nothing more than a pre-planned photo op for Greg Fisher to get his name in the news, acting like he was doing something. And he knew damn good well that Sunday at 1 o'clock was a work time to do that.
No spontaneity, no passion, no coarseness, no nothing. This was a completely orchestrated 3 to 4 hour waste of time.
Exactly. And speaking of time, man, we actually went into overdrive for about 2 minutes, so I apologize for that. But I guess we're out of time, so go ahead and get into your closing comments.
Well, the closing comments, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this again, but I'm trying desperately to see the positive in this. I mean, we're finally getting these youth. You know, the cameras are being turned on them. They're telling us what they're pissed off about. They're telling us how pissed off they are. And unfortunately, they're lashing out at people in an area that our city has lied through its teeth to us to tell is perfectly safe for the nice Highlands people and the East End people, you know. So there's a clash going on between the cultures in this city, and I actually think some good's going to come of it because I have never heard a kid speak like that, you know, at least get the attention and get, you know, they probably said it, but nobody thought it necessary to broadcast. So it's like, great, we're hearing what these kids got to say. And now it's, and I don't want to sound like an activist or something, but now it's kind of been thrown in the face of everybody else who's not a part of this world. And we've got a decision to make as a city as a whole. Are we going to listen to these kids? Or are we going to, you know, are we going to play this, I hate to say it, but we're going to play this Republican right-wing sanctimonious crap where we go, well, they get what they deserve. Or are we going to listen to them and think, you know what, this is a problem. Maybe we need to not keep the road, you know, maybe we need to focus on something besides Valhalla or the Yum Center or something like that. Maybe we need to focus more resources on stuff that's not so shiny and bright. We need to get down there and fix some problems. So I think it's put it out so it's so prominent right now, and I think that we're getting to the, you know, we're getting some honest dialogue. I'm hoping that people look at it and think, yeah, I mean, me as an East Ender, fine. Patch the potholes. Don't worry about repaving the road. I think you could use that money a little better down in West Louisville. You know, if it has to do with Shelby Campus, you know, or anything on Shelby Hill Road or development, city development, the big going up around us. It's great. But, you know, if right now we've got a problem, and I can be self-centered, but I can also look at this problem, and it's kind of opened my eyes where I'm thinking, you know, I'm not for throwing money away, and I'm not for throwing money at a problem the old classic liberal style, you know, just give them more money, it'll be better. But I think with an honest dialogue and we can refocus some efforts, maybe we can finally, after all of your lifetime and all of my lifetime, maybe the Democrat machine, maybe the political machine in general in this city and this state can pull their heads out of their ass and figure out a way to actually revitalize the West End.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I tell you, you know, it's interesting. You were talking about how to revitalize, and you were talking about throwing money at a problem. I sit here and I question. I look at the corporate welfare that goes on right here in Louisville to places like the Cordish Group and 4th Street Live that has never amounted to anything or had any noticeable accomplishment or made any noticeable difference in the downtown entertainment district at all. We're supposed to do profit sharing with Cordish on the 4th Street Live deal. We've never received a dime in return, yet we continue throwing millions of dollars at them. And I have to ask myself why we ignored the infrastructure. Because the West End is right there. That is the West End. Four blocks to the west, you begin what's commonly known as the West End in Louisville at 9th Street. You commonly begin four blocks away. Why is it that we didn't spend a few million dollars that we've allowed Cordish to keep scamming out of our daggone tax money? Why is it that we didn't take some of that money and build that infrastructure and build that neighborhood and then revisit 4th Street Live and make it an entertainment corridor that the whole community could be involved in? What we did is we created a Chinese wall or the Berlin Wall. We put a wall here and said, you're not going past 9th Street. We don't want to include you in downtown entertainment, because we made the West End the poorest community and the worst community we could possibly do. Our Democratic leadership did. It's interesting to me when I see people like Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry writing these documents called Flash Mob Violence, saying that the LMPD has known about this issue for a long time and done nothing to address it. That has failed a leadership at every area. But is it intentional failure? Because in the case of the LMPD and Deputy Chief Yvette Gentry, I have to say yes. If she can write a document in a couple of hours after these incidents took place and tell the whole world that they've known for several weeks that these incidents are rising and that everything is becoming more severe, that she's either talking off the hip because she doesn't have a clue, or she'd been whitewashing the problem. And no, that wasn't a Freudian slip, folks. That is the problem. That's why you have people that are out there that we call community activists. I'm labeled everything in the world, but one of those labels is a community activist. And I wear that tag proudly because I continue to fight against these type of injustices. If there is any one thing that came out of this that I see as a positive, if there's any one thing that I see positive, I see a 14-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl letting their names be printed in a paper, putting them in danger because they care enough to tell us the truth. And the truth is that the adult leadership does not care one bit about the neighborhoods. And that's from Greg Fisher on up and Greg Fisher on down. You want to make changes? Make them at the voting booth. You've got some choices in November. Let's start there. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here with me as usual in studio. And we'll get into business then. And don't forget Thursday Night Truth right here at 7 o'clock as well with Dale the Truth and his own unique brand of award events. Until then, Mr. Martin, have a great week.
All right. You too, sir.
Thank you so much, sir. And we'll see the rest of you guys tomorrow night at 7. Take care and have a good one. See you.